Hashem is the eighth son. This is a psalm which speaks of the relations of God in the acts of nature itself. But there is an underwriting theme to this psalm that David HaMelech connects it really to the Torah. In fact, this psalm, according to the Vilna Gaon, was recited in every Simchas Torah. He picked this psalm to be recited as the Shir Shalyom. Now, there were some opinions that state that David HaMelech composed this psalm when he was bringing the Torah back, the Ark of God, from the house of Obed Edom Hagiti. In the second book of Samuel, we read there that when they were first transporting the Ark, Uzo and Achio, two brothers, two priests, went ahead and they grabbed hold of the Ark as it was shaking, and they died. And because of that, there was a fear and a dread in the hearts of everyone. And Obed Edom Hagiti, who happened to be a lady, so he took the Ark for a few months under his jurisdiction. And he was blessed because of this. And then the fear dissipated, and that's when David HaMelech brought the Ark up to the city of David. And that's when he was dancing, if you recall the incident, when he was dancing with wild abandon, and his wife reprimanded him that it's unfitted or not suited for a king. So they say that David HaMelech composed this psalm at that time. And in fact, Gittis, as this is written, Lamnatzeach ala Gittis, some say that Gittis relates to the Ark, and it was called Gittis because of the house of Gitti, that it stood in the house of Gitti for 3 months. So it's like they gave the name of the Ark, they gave it Gittis. But if we question, if we assume that there is a relationship between the Ark and this, that which means between the Torah and between the essence of Psalm 8, therefore we can appreciate why the Goyen chose this as a Shir Shalyom to say Chas Torah. Yet when you examine the phraseology used in the essence of the psalm, you don't see any relevance or any reference to Torah. You see about the realization of God through nature. How does Torah fit into this? So this is a question which will be the underlying theme which we will discuss today. Now the Rambam in Yesodei HaTorah speaks, quotes the following quotation. He says, we know there's a mitzvah to love God because it says that one should love his God. So he says, how will one achieve this love of God? So he says, when a person delves into the creation and the wondrous beings that God created, he will be able, even at first glance, to see a wisdom, a deep wisdom, which there is no comparison and no end. This, however, will bring out a love within him, and he will be oed mishapeach u'mefayer u'misave taiva gedela. He'll start to love and to praise and to develop within him a strong drive, a passion, leida Hashem ha'gadol, to get to know the essence of God more intimate. K'meisha omer David, like David expressed himself when he said, somo nafshi, my soul thirsts, lelakim, to God, who is a keil chai. The language of Lekeo Chai is a living God, as we'll see later in the psalm too, because God is a living creator. When he starts to think about these things, he falls back out of fear, because he realizes that he's a small little creature, low and black and dark, very little intellect, nifnei tomim deos, in the presence of the complete God. Just like David said, and he quotes from our psalm, the Maimonides, ki eves shomecha, because the heavens show, maaseh et chosecha, the acts et posef of the deeds of your fingers. Mo'enish tisisterena. Therefore, what value is humble man that you should even recall him? So this the Rambam says, is the approach, that the person first is enthralled, enamored by the magnificence of nature, and this brings out in him a drive to get to understand nature to a greater degree. And once he understands this nature, so then he sees the depth of nature, of the greatness of God, and his poverty, his humility, but nothing, he's negated or even. And Mo'enish Kisiskerenu, and this brings out a true Yiras Hashem. This is the way the Rambam interprets the past, that a person can get to Ahava, a person can get to love of God. So, the Rambam says a little earlier, says one of the mitzvahs is La'Avas Hashem, is to love God. So he says, but how does a person get to this mitzvah? So it says, like we say in the Shema, Ve'ahavtas Hashem l'kecha, you're supposed to love God. These keeping these commandments that I command you today, by keeping these commandments you can achieve le'avo es Hashem, to love God. So here we see that Torah will bring a person to love God. Yet, and you say that Torah, the Rambam says that nature brings a person to love God by looking at the phenomena of nature. So in some way we have to relate Torah to nature, in both of them bringing about the phenomenon, I mean the idea of recognition of God. In a sense, that's what he does here. He composes this psalm of nature when he's rejoicing with the bringing of Torah. So in some way, Torah is related to nature. How is it related? So that we'll try to establish. Let's start the chapter. It says, L'Natzeach HaLagipis, this song he composed for the conductor. Halagitis. Now some say, that we just mentioned earlier, Gitis referring when they brought back the Torah. But others take it literally that Gitis is a musical instrument. And the reason it was called Gitis is because that instrument was manufactured in the city of Gas, which is the Plishtim, Gat. So they called it L'Natzeach HaLagitis. Others interpret Gitis that David HaMelech composed this psalm to be sung by the family of Obed Edom Hagiti, who were Levi, were Levites. And therefore, because they kept the Torah in their safekeeping and were able to reestablish in the eyes of Israel the greatness of that, so therefore he went ahead and he composed a special psalm for them to sing. So that's the second interpretation of Gittis. There's a third interpretation of Gittis in the Medrash, quoted by Rashi. Gittis refers to the enemies, the Medrash says, who are destined to be crushed by God, like Gittis, like a wine press. Gittis is a press. So the enemies who are, he's saying this, regarding the time when the enemies of Israel will be crushed by God as if they would be wine in a wine press. Now, Hirsch, speaking of this, Rashi says, that really wine pressing is really not a destruction of the grapes. But when you press wine, it seems that it's an apparent destruction of the grapes because looks like it's being smashed into pieces, but in reality, the pressure does not really destroy it. But it brings out everything, which he says, which is fine and noble within the grape itself. It brings out the beauty of the grape, the sweetness, which is the wine. So he says that the same vein, this psalm demonstrates that the pressing that God will come give about, that means the affliction that he will bring on these nations, will ultimately lead to the recognition of God. It will bring out, sometimes by the affliction, by the pressing, you bring out the wine. This is generally good, you know. Sometimes when you save the grapes, you never really bring out the essence of the grape itself. You're afraid when you're dealing with children, we're afraid. We overextend ourselves sometimes to protect them, that there shouldn't be any pressing on the grape, and therefore it could be that they live through a life without giving out any wine. If they have to be pressed a little bit, this will bring out from within them the juice. This will bring out from within them the sweetness in the wine. Otherwise, you could have the most beautiful grapes with real sweetness, but you've never brought it to have the opportunity to bring it out and to taste But he's saying here that when an evangelism presses what would seem to be an apparent destruction for mankind, but this affliction of mankind will bring out the sweetness and that which is treasured in the grapes. So David HaMelech begins, and he says, Hashem Adineinu. Again, using God with the name Yudkeh Vavkeh. There are many connotations to the word Yudkeh Vavkeh, like we've speaking in the past. The names, the way you spell God's names, the descriptions denote certain strengths of God. Yudkeh Vavkeh, as we've said, is the God of mercy, of compassion. Yudkeh Vavkeh also means, like Avraham Avinu taught, the personal God who's concerned with you, you know, with the God, with the individual life of each individual. Yudkeh Vavkeh also is Hoya Hoveh Liyeh, is the God who is present. That means that the Malbim points out the term of the use here, that this is a perpetual. The name of God here is perpetual, bringing forth into existence. And this is a theme which we mention in our davening. We say, HaMechadesh B'tuvei B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh B'reishis. That God perpetually brings about the greatness, right? The tuva with his greatness. B'chol Yom Tamid. It's not that one day he created the heavens. One day he created the stars, and one day he created the sun. And the sun comes up every day. It's a new creation of God. HaMechadesh, he renews B'chol Yom Tamid Ma'aseh B'reishis. The same thing the human being, when he gets up in the morning, he thanks God for the Shamash and the Satavi. It's like a renewal of the spirit every day. This perhaps is the reference that Maimonides quotes before, when he looks up and he sees, Kemo Shama David, Soma Nafshi Lelekim, my heart calls out, or is thirsty for God, my spirit, Lekeo Chai, a living God. We say in our davening, Melech Keo Chai V'Kayom, a living God. The idea of a living God is, it's not just, we'll say, La'abdil, like some Rembrandt painted a beautiful painting and he's no longer existing. So I really can't feel a strong relationship, an intimacy, a desire to get to know him better. Want to know about him, I appreciate it, but there's something that is missing. You can't say that there's a strong passion to know him, to see him. He's no longer there. When you get the passion, the Rambam says, Soma Nafshi, David HaMelech speaks out, Lekeo Chai, to a living God. That's not a God that created thousands of years ago, Rembrandt the world, and is not here. But HaMechadesh B'tuvei B'chol Yom Tamid, this is a God who's painting today, who's creating today. So this brings us closer with the grant, with a chance of greater intimacy. So this can also be in the word Yudkeh Vavkeh. It's a God who is Hoya Hoveh Liyeh. It's a living God. Hashem Adoneinu, perpetually bringing forth what the Malbim means things into existence. This is the God who is our master. Now he continues, he says, Mo Adir Shimcho, how powerful and how mighty is your name, the Chol Ha'aretz, throughout the earth. Asher Tenohu Tcho, Al HaShemayim, that you have given your hod, your glory, your majesty on the heavens. So there are different ways to look at this phrase, Asher Tnohu Tcho Al HaShemayim. Some say that although you, God, have given the essence of your glory along the heavens, truly the essence of your glory is really along the heavens. Even so, right, your greatness is evident throughout this world. That means we see the greatness of God, but we can't think this is all that God is. It's great enough. It's a phenomenon we can't really understand. But the essence of God's glory, that's beyond our comprehension. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, right, was told, Ki le'yirani ho'odom v'chai. A person cannot see God to understand the essence of God. The 50th gate of wisdom was held back from any human being. So although we see the glory of God, b'chol ha'aretz, we have to realize that the true hod, the true wonders of God is Al HaShemayim, over the heavens, beyond our comprehension. Another interpretation is, by Rashi, that God, you have given us and shown us the essence of your glory, which we truly shouldn't deserve it, because it would be fit that this majesty of God should be above the heavens, not Mo'adir Shimcha B'chol Ha'aretz, that frail man should be given this opportunity to see the greatness. These are two interpretations. So what he's saying is that the revelations are so manifest, and it's really more than we should really be privileged to observe. And he says further, Mipi'olalim liyonkin, from the mouth of babes, the yonkin, the sucklings, children that nurse, you started to oaths, you have established your foundation of strength. What is the meaning of this? Some learn that from the miracle, the first miracle that a person would observe would be the miracle of a young child. That means a young child who is born. A minute after the child is born, the mother is automatically able to nurse him. There's a flow of milk, and the milk is regulated according to the needs of the child, his capacity, his ability. And that itself is nature. A little child is born, all of a sudden, and the mother, he was fed a different way from the blood here. All of a sudden he realizes that he has a drive within him, a natural drive, to go ahead and to nurse. And the mother has the capacity to go ahead and to nurse him. So God provides, we'll say, for the human being in a phenomenal way. Nobody would think that's a miracle, because these phenomena we don't consider to be miracles. But when you really think into it, isn't that a miracle? The same miracles. You put a seed and a potato comes out of the ground. That's also the same miracle, but by us it's not miracles because it happens all the time. But when you think into it, the most simple elementary, the first step in existence, is a miracle which is wondrous when you think into it. And when you go back a step further, I always like to quote the Mitzvot, which Rabbi says in a different chapter of Hamelech's piece, the miracle, we'll say, goes even further. It goes back to the moment of conception. We say during the period of the Yomim Nevayim, the David Hashem Meiri, the psalm of the David Hashem Meiri. So it says there, Yavi Yimi Yazbuni VeHashem Azbuni VeHashem Yasmeini, that my father and mother have forsaken me and God has gathered me in. So literally it's interpreted to mean that a person, although he's alone and so on, he has no one to look after him, he's orphaned, but his God is still living, his father is still looking after him. There's another interpretation which some of the commentaries mention. It says, for example, you know, speaking back to the beginning of life, when the mother, say, feels after perhaps 6 weeks she's pregnant, she goes to see the doctor, the obstetrician, and he says, that's true, you're going to have a child, I don't want you to lift anything, and I want you to get enough rest, and I want you to drink and eat these foods and take vitamins. And she starts to watch herself, and every moment is deliberate, you know, because she has to protect a new life that's in her. So who was watching him the first 6 weeks before the mother became concerned about his well-being? So that's how he interprets the passage, Avi ve'imi yazbuni v'ashem yasvein, that God, the father didn't know, the mother sure didn't know, they didn't know that she was, that there was a moment of conception had taken place, but v'ashem yasvein, God had gathered in him and taken care of this child. So in a sense, it's a true act of nature too. Till the mother finds out, God takes care of him. This is also the beginning of the wonder of the human being. From the earliest moment itself, you see the greatness of God. So he says here, but what is obvious to the eye is the phenomenon that takes place. This is one interpretation. Then there's another interpretation, which my Rebbe Zalman is always the same. I see they bring down a similar thing from Hirsch. That that to establish the greatness of God, even a little child is enabled to yain it, a baby, is able to see the greatness of God. And what does this mean? You don't have to be a tremendous intellectual. You don't have to be a great philosopher and study all the wisdoms and all the philosophies and then first come to a recognition that there is a God. Because there isn't enough time in life to do that. And also the Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, the love of God, the recognition of belief as God, was a commandment that was given to everyone, every person, every human being. Every Jew has this mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem. He doesn't have to be a great philosopher. He doesn't have the intellectual ability. He doesn't have the desire to be a philosopher. But he can't exclude himself from the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem. So it seems that a person can have this mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem even what? Even without becoming this great intellectual giant. And recognizing that there is a God. Everybody is supposed to love and recognize there is a God. How? So you have to say that really the Olel Vione, the youngest child, by looking at nature, right, is able to recognize that there is a creator. He has, for as much as needed, what is needed to recognize that God is the creator is present in the Olel Vione. Mipi Olim Vionkin, from the mouths of the babies and the young children,
Yesada Ta'oz can be established by greatness, because when he looks at nature, as the Rambam and others discuss, he itself recognizes that there must be a creator. We quoted a few weeks ago, we were learning the Chinuch Shabbos, about the mean, meaning the, I think it was two weeks ago, came in the midst of Aras Hashem. So there's a medrash that says an agnostic came to Rabbi Akiva, and he asked him, how do I know that there is a creator? So Rabbi Akiva says, well, how do you know who made your suit? Or who made the suit? So he says, a tailor. So he says, how do you know a tailor made the suit? Because he says, that means the suit, who else is going to make it except the tailor? If you see a suit, you know a tailor made it. If you see a house, you know a builder made it. Somebody had to make it, it just didn't come into being by itself. So he went away. Then the students of Rabbi Akiva, so they felt, this is time to tell somebody at theirs. You know, the person was an agnostic, he didn't want to get into any discussion with him, so he gave him a simple answer like you would give a child, that if there is a suit, there had to be a tailor. If there's a building, there had to be a builder. So they told Rabbi Akiva, but we're your students, so they figured now it'd be privileged to get the true realization how one is able to determine that there's a God. So they asked Rabbi Akiva, now what is the real reason? How do you know? Rabbi Akiva said, just like the stoop tells you there was a tailor, just like the building tells you there was a builder. The fact that there's a creation tells you there was a creator. So he didn't give them any more philosophical or esoteric reason. The reason that he gave them is a very simplistic thing, that even an olel v'yomim, any child who is already the age of performing a mitzvah, knowing that he makes a bracha, who he's making it to, that's already enough for his realization to know that there's a God. Like Rabbi Chanan Wasserman asks, so if that's the case, it's so simple. How could you have such great philosophers, weak philosophers, so on, that they were agnostics and they were atheists? I mean, they surely had the intellectual ability to probe and understand. What makes them not see something, or how can they not see something that is so obvious that even a little child can see it? If you look at the stars and you see the glory of God. So he answers, that's what the idea of Shochad is. They have their reasons why they can't see. And this is the famous story. He gives the footnote I heard many, many years ago from the marshal that great Goyim, the Motherfucker Mansky, gave. I used it a number of times, perhaps. If the visitors came into a museum and they were all observing these beautiful pictures and they were going marvelous, incredible, everybody was singing praises. This one person kept on saying, Barenot. They took him over to Picasso. They said, what do you see? Barenot. They take him over to Rembrandt. What is this? Looks like a glob of Barenot. They showed him all the beautiful artists. Everything looks to him like Barenot. So somebody said to him, let me take a look at your glasses. He looked at the glasses. He saw there was buttermilk. Glasses of buttermilk. He says, everything looks like buttermilk. So that's really the reason. He says, God's wisdom, he said, is evident really in every atom of the universe. Every blade of grass and every molecule of matter really shouts out the unmistakable message that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is there. But if a person has shochad, he has tivus, he has desires which contrast to the Torah, he really doesn't want to see God. He puts a lot of buttermilk on it because he loves buttermilk. If he loves something else, ice cream, design ice cream, whatever it is. But everything that he sees only with his desire. Now you can be a great genius. But if your eyesight is blinded by your own passions, by your own material desires, so you neglect to see that which is really what the object is. Now with this we can understand really the theme of this chapter, like I mentioned earlier, what does Torah have to do with love of God? If nature is going to show you the love of God, that the Mithiolim Vionkim, Yesada Ta'oz, that even the child can recognize, as we'll see, so what does it have to do with Torah? The answer is Torah is able to clean the glasses. Torah, the mitzvahs of Torah, the purity of Torah, the midos of Torah, is able to wipe away the buttermilk in your glasses. Once it wipes away the buttermilk with the Torah, then you're able to come to Ahavas Hashem, to the love of God, because then you'll have the innocence and the purity of an olel v'yonek, of a young child. A young child who is innocent, who is pure, has 20/20 vision, he doesn't need glasses, he surely has no buttermilk. When he looks up at the heavens, he sees the glory of God. I was thinking the other day, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos which always troubled me. It says, I mean, the real interpretation troubled me, but this makes it a little clearer, I think. It says, Amahalak Baderef, if a person is walking along the way, and he sees a tree, and he says, and he's studying Torah, Bishoni, he's studying Torah, and he sees a tree, and he says, Manoi Iman Zeh, how beautiful this tree is, Mano Emirze, Arezem Ishaya Benachi, and he forfeited his life. So what is the meaning of it? What is the message? It seems that his Torah, that language is always used when the Torah really wasn't learned properly, Ishaya Benachi. But how is this related to saying Mano Emirze? Because if a person studied Torah properly and he sees a tree, he doesn't say Mano Emirze, such a beautiful tree, but he'd say Marabu Masefa Hashem, I've rated thy deeds, God the Creator. What does he see when he looks at the tree? Does he just see a beautiful tree that all the Greek philosophers saw? Of course you see a beautiful tree, but if you're learning Torah, it's supposed to open your eyes that when you look at the tree, it's not the beautiful tree, it's the Creator of the tree. He should say not Manoe Gimonzer when he sees this tree, but Marabu Masecho Hashem, how great are thy deeds and thy creations, O God. So if a person is studying Torah and he sees the tree, he neglected to get the message of the Torah if he responds by saying, Manoi Imon Zed. I thought came to my mind this week. This is really the theme of this chapter. That when you're studying Torah, then you open up the book and you say, Kiyara Shamnecha. So he continues, he says, Mipi Oilulim Beyonkin, from the mouths of the Oilulim Beyonkin, Yisadet the Oz, you have established, from them itself we can see the greatness of God. Leman Tzerarecha. And really, you made it so simple. Leman Tzorarecha, because of your enemies, Lahashpis Oyeidu Misnakim, to avenge and to silence the foe and the avenger. What does this mean, because of your enemies? Hirsch interprets the word Tzorarecha, that the word Tzor means very narrow. Leman Tzorarecha, very narrow. A lot of people, they want to put God out of their life. You know, if they'll draw all the shades down, so then they won't see God. If they'll never walk by a synagogue, so God will be out of their mind. They don't have to remind themselves of God, right? Maybe once a year from day to shul, conscience will bother them, but they try to get God out of their mind all the time. But if every place they go, they stumble over God, so really, it's very disconcerting to them. I mean, they can't get him out of his mind. If God would put himself in the back of some book that you really have to study your whole life to be able to come to that recognition, so life's going to be a lot more pleasant for them because they don't have to contemplate and they're not studying the book. But if you walk outside and you look at the tree, you see God. If you look at the heavens, you see God. You look at the stars, you see God. So he made it so obvious that it's Orecha, that those that are wanting to confine God in a very narrow place, they can't do that because God is all over. This was the purpose why he made it so literal and so explicit that even a young child, if the Olalim Beyonkin Yisadet Ta'oz, would be able to recognize God. Why? Leman Tzerarecha, because you have these people who are trying to push you out of their life. Vahashbi Soyeva Misnakein, so you will be able really to avenge yourself and to show them their mistakes. That there is no way that they can limit and confine God. Because the realization of God is always obvious, even to the small child. Then David HaMelech continues, Ki eve shamecha mase etzposecha. When I look up into the heavens, and I see the work etzposecha of your fingers, your reyach lekechodim, the stars and the moon, asher kononto, that you have established. Now the idea of emphasizing the stars and the moon, one would think that the sun is even a greater creation of God than the moon. The sun is greater than the moon. But some say that David HaMelech, the Radak brings down, didn't mention the sun because he made this sound when he was at night. And at night he was looking up at the moon and the stars. And looking up at the moon and the stars, he saw the creation. But Hirsch adds, more so at night than during the day. Because during the day, what do? The sun is closer to the earth, so you can't look up and gaze in the sun, it'll burn your eyes out. So you could see the warmth of the sun, and you could just see the earth. But at night, when the earth is removed further, and you could gaze on beyond the horizons, you see the beautiful sky. You see the moon, you see the great stars. So there's more of nature that's visible at night. So that's why David HaMelech emphasizes not the nature that's visible in the day, but Yoreach Mekechovim, the stars and the moon, Asher Kronata, that you have established. That means the greatness of the nature is visible more at night than during the day. Now, et for sefer, meaning, again, definite the creation of God. He wants to emphasize there's no mistake. When you look at that, you can see the finger of God. The term, the finger of God, we find during Mitzrayim, Yetzias Mitzrayim, when Moshe would bring about the act of a miracle, but it would say, et for Elohim, this is the finger of God. So it means there's no denying that this is God's action. So when you look at the heavens, he says, Maisa et Vosekov. There is no question that this is really the intricate work of God, and the finger of God is that visible. And there's a quote brought down that we find the word, Rav Sadia Gaon says that we find the word etzpa used a number of places. It speaks of the stars and planets, right over here, Yoreach v'Kechavim. It uses the term etzpa when he's speaking here of the celestial heavenly bodies. You also use the term etzpa when you speak of the tables of the covenant. When it speaks of the Ten Commandments, it says it was written the etzpa Elohim. And you also find by the plague of Kinim, when the lice came about in Mitzrayim, in the Ten Makos, you find also the term used etzpa. It brings down from the Rabbeinu Bachya, who says that the stars represent the greatest of all physical masses, for no creation exceeds their size. That's etzpa Elohim. The lice are the most despicable and smallest of creation. There we also find etzpa. The luchos are even smaller than the stars, of course, but they're greater in splendor, because that was the luchos written by God directly. So this shows you that although all three of these creations differ totally one from another, but to God, they're all described with the word etzpa, by showing God's effort in creating everything was equal. All it took like was an etzpa Elohim, being it the greatest star, to the smallest little gnat, to the smallest little mosquito, it's etzpa Elohim that created it. Everything is the direct work of God, like we said, realizing that it's the direct work of God, and also the greatness and the power of God, that he used the term etzpa Elohim, it's like only a finger that created it. Then he says, Mo'enosh, after one looks at this, like Maimonides said, the Rambam, what does this bring out, the response? How does he say? Mo'enosh, David HaMelech said, Tierra Shamef HaMai says, Basef, he quotes these phrases. Mo'enosh, Kisiskerenu, what is man that you should remember him? Uven Adam, and the Son of Man, Kisifkedenu, that you should be appointing him or mindful of him. Now the commentaries make note that the word enosh means that the person is frail, anushis, a human, a frail person. The person is frail, he's weak. There are shortcomings, there are limitations by his physical body. He's very restricted when you compare him to the heavenly bodies. That's the strength of the person himself. So he says, how strong is this person that he's worthy of God even remembering him? It's nothing, it's significant. Do we remember a fly? Do we remember a little bee? And not only that, and man, who ben adam, Malcolm points out the term ben adam means mortality. Normally a creation could be an adam, a this, that, but by human being you use the term ben adam, meaning that one human being dies away and his children continue. So a human being is only mortal. Now if God wanted to appoint someone, like it says by Odom HaRishon, he put him in Gan Eden, like Abdol Lashonlo, man was a steward of nature, a steward of God's creation. God appointed or made a creation for the benefit of man. Now man is immortal. So why does he take man who is mortal and appoints him as the power in this world? He could have installed someone else who is immortal, a creation of God. So he says, why did you pick Ben Adam, Hurst says, a mortal man, Kisid Kedem? Why did you pick him as your emissary, as a purpose who represents divine authority on this world? Because divine sovereignty was given over to a human being who is only immortal. One would think that he would pick a creation, either an angel or a star, who is immortal. Yet you chose man. So Mo'enesh Kisif Kerenu, who is frail and weak, who ben adam, mortal man, Kisif Kedenu, that you should appoint him over your nature. Not only that, you made him a little less than an angel.
V'tachasveyu, v'tachasveyu me'at, me'elekim. And you made him a little less, me'elehim, meaning Elohim here means an angel. Why is he a little less than an angel? Well, actually his mission is almost like an angel because he has an intellectual ability. He surpasses all living creatures because he has the capacity for speaking intelligently, correct, and also for his rational communication. So you can't liken any animal or any beast to a human being. So in this, he's like an angel. And the fact is, he's only the spirit of man's soul. The man's soul is a spirit. Man's soul is not made out of matter, but it's made out of pure spirit. We believe that's the difference. I mean, everything is a soul. Everything has a soul. Depends what you call soul. If you look at an inanimate object, for instance, there is some force that keeps this table together, atoms that cling together, a magnetic force. Otherwise, this would be shattered into millions of little pieces. What keeps this together? Or what makes the plant grow, which is also a force in a soul? Or the animal who moves around and eats is also a soul. We see in Bereshis, it's called the Nefesh Chaya. It's called a soul. But there, it doesn't say that God gave in to the animal a living soul. It just says it had a living soul. The animal's living soul is part of nature. Everything has a soul. This is a more sophisticated type of a soul, but its composition is from material nature. Only by man, in the creation, you look in Bereshit, does it say, Vayipach be'afov nishmas chayim, that God breathed through his nostrils the breath of life. Vayi adam lenefesh chayim, a man became a living being. And the Targum says, Nefesh nishmas chayim ruach memalolo, that man became a spirit that speaks. So this ability to articulate the spirit that man possesses is not just the soul. That's a spirit, the heavenly soul. So in that, he is like an angel. Me'at me'elekim is that this soul doesn't have the freedom that the angel's soul has. It's confined in a physical body. So that's the creation of God, which he says, v'tachsereyu me'at me'elehim. You made him just a little less than what? Than an angel. Now, the Rashi brings, just as an interesting thought, Rashi brings that man really is like an angel. What is an angel? An angel is given many missions by God. That's what we believe. The purpose of an angel is to fulfill a mission of God, to bring about miraculous things. The angel brings about miraculous occurrences. The angel is given in many times the power of God to supersede nature, to change nature, and to bring about these nisim. But he says man also has almost that same ability. And he quotes the cases where Yeshua brought the stop to the sun, he stopped the sun. Yeshua was able to command the Yarden to dry up. Moshe was able to split the sea, rise up to the Torah, to receive the Torah in heaven. Elohim brought back the dead, of reviving the dead. So Machiah Macy. So we see that even man was given certain missions, right? That Tatsarei, you gave him the Atmelechim, in a sense, you gave him part of the power of angels, because he possesses this great divine spark within him. So he can only be used in the same form that an angel can be used. Man can achieve such a very a high level that he can be as an angel and used as an angel, although he is involved and encompassed in his physical body. Then he says, you've adorned him with the soul and with glory, like we just said. You gave him this soul and this hador. There's another interpretation that said that this kadosh v'hador, which he refers to here with the soul and the splendor, is something that the angel lacks. He is a little less than an angel. But the kaveh v'hador, you gave him kaveh v'hador. You gave him soul and splendor. You adorned him with, and the angel does not have this kaveh v'hador. How could that be? Because we know that an angel doesn't have any ability to choose between good and bad. He has no challenges, right? He has no victories. When do you have challenges? When do you have victories? If there's a battle, right? Like Chris says, you know, we speak of the innocence of a child. He says a child, in one way, you say it's an innocence. It's pure, but it's not innocence. Innocence means, he says, when you have an opportunity to be guilty and you're innocent. A child doesn't have any temptation.
He said that if a person is older, speaks there about sorrow, the relationship between wanting and sin, when you achieve a certain age, and then there's temptation, and you overcome your temptation, the fact that he's an angel, he can't sin, there's no proof that the innocent is a child. But the fact that he is a human being, it's me'at melekim, true, and he has a physical fire also, and he is able to overpower this physical fire, that shows really that he is adorned by the kavod and the hador, by the strength of the spirit within him, which God has adorned him. And this isn't as visible in an angel as it is as visible in a human being. And that's why, to the contrary, because the tatzareu ma'at melekim, therefore you can say the kavod, the hador, tatzareu, the glory and soul that he shows cannot even be established or achieved, I mean cannot be achieved and reached by the angels themselves. Then he continues, Tamshileyu b'masei yodecha. You have given him dominion over the creations of your hands, the handiwork of your hands. Kol, everything. Shata, you have placed tachas raglov, underneath his power, underneath his feet. You have given him total authority and total dominion over your creations. Now here it's interesting. Can you call a person a Moshe? It seems that God makes him, what does the word Moshe mean? Hirsch points out, normally the word Moshe means an absolute ruler. Are we really absolute rulers? How can a frail human being be an absolute ruler? God placed him here as the leader, as the steward, but not really a ruler. So Hirsch points out that we find the word Moshe used not as an absolute ruler, but we also find the word Moshe used as one who is the steward. It says there by Eliezer, the servant of Avram, HaMosheil b'chol asher lo, who is the authority or rules. Now he wasn't the true ruler of Avram's wealth. It was Avram who was the true ruler. And after Avram's death, it would be Yitzchak. But what is the idea of Moshel? Meaning he is the one who is given the responsibility. He is the steward. So therefore he says that Hashem has also appointed man to be his steward. This is the household of God. Right? God created a household in this world, the terrestrial world, and he appointed man to be the Moshel, to be the steward and the ruler. Hakol, everything, tachas raglov, is subservient to man. The idea of raglov using, because he steps, right? The Gemara says that a person wakes up in the morning, before he puts on his shoes, he makes the bracha. Then they used to make each bracha, and we say for birchas hashachar, they used to make each blessing at a different time. So when he wakes up in the morning and he puts on his shoes, he says, Ho'eitza li kol tzorachi. He has provided me with all my needs. So why do they use the term kol tzorachi, with all my needs? So they bring down from the Marshal this interpretation. Because really, as we said before, everything is created with a soul. The same idea. There are different categories in this world. You have the minerals, the vegetables, the animals, and the humans. Now the mineral feeds the vegetable. The vegetable feeds the animal. The animal feeds the human. So this is symbolized, Mashal says, when he puts on his shoes, which is the animal in the morning, tachas raglov, under his feet. So in that way, it seems hakol, you put everything underneath his dominion. Everything is serving man to serve God in this form because it is epitomized by his dominion, by his power over the animal who is over all of the other creations. So everything was provided. Everything in this world was provided for his need. Now, and they quote this passage. Then he says, Sona ve'alotim the sheep, they are loving in the cattle, kulam, all of them, all domesticated animals. Begam behamos skodon, and even the beasts of the open field. Here, behamo, behamo means the beast, the wild animal. Now you'll ask, how could you have man over wild animals? So the Medrash brings down many instances where man had special dominion over wildlife. They quote Shlomo, who knew lecture and the essence of the beast and the fish and the birds, the reptiles, and Shimshin, who trapped 300 wild fox to do his bidding, or Daniel said in the lions, then there are times when he has had dominion over that. But that's the Medrash. But really there is the Radak says, in a literal meaning, that even the non-domesticated
animals are considered under man's rule because he understands them intellectually. What does this mean?
If you look back in the beginning of Bereshit, you see there that it says that God brought all the animals to Adam Arishan that he should go and give them a name.
So it uses the expression, Chaya. And then it uses, after Adam names it, it says Behema and Chaya. Because really, when you look at a beast and it comes to you, what was the idea of Adam's naming? So the way they interpreted means that Adam understood the, like Shlomo, he knew the makeup, the composition, the character, the nature of each creation of God. So when they came to Adam, it all looked the same. A hippopotamus, a cow, an elephant, a lion, they all looked like beasts. Yet when he went into the nature of each one, he already delineated between the behemoths and between the chayas. He knew which animal is more a domestic animal that can work for man, and which is a wild animal. So man has the ability to discern and understand the essence of each creation of each animal. This can really give him dominion. Why? Did you ever wonder when you go to a circus, you see six big lions and tigers prancing around, and when you got a tiger or a lion out here, you can have a 400-pound football player. He'll run for his life and climb on the tree to get away from the tiger. I call Shato Tahas Tagla, even the Bahamas Soda, even the wild. Why? Because he studies, he knows what makes the tiger tick. And when he understands the essence and the character and the nature of the tiger or of the lion, he can even show dominion over the tiger and over the lion. So it seems that man has the intellectual ability to be the steward over the entire creation, over all the nature, natural creations of God. Sipor Shemayim, even the birds in heaven, with the Geayom, and the fish of the sea. Meaning that if you have birds, how high they may fly, man is able to bring them down, shoot them down. And the fish, they can go in the middle of the Atlantic, hundreds and hundreds of feet down, right? We know that there are fishing trawlers and ships that go out there and they grab them. There's no way that the fish can escape man's innovative ways with his intelligence to capture the fish. He said, Sipor Shamayim Ugeayon, Ober, because man crashed the point. Why? Because Ober or Chesyamim. Man is able to walk or to travel, Ober to travel the roads, the sea lanes in the sea. So there is no way that any nature can hide from man. Man was given the ability because he is the Moshe, he is the ruler. Hashem Adineinu Mo'adir Shimcha B'Kol HaOretz. How mighty is your name throughout the land. He repeats the same passage that he said originally, right? In sentence 3, or 2, where it said, Hashem Adineinu Mo'adir Shimcha B'Kol HaOretz. But there he added, Asher T'no Hotcho Al HaShemoyim. Because you have given your glory, right, over in the heavens. Here he leaves out the final phrase, Asher T'no Hotcho Al HaShemoyim. Because he's speaking here of the great hope, the greatness of God, which is recognizable, Be'oretz, in this earth. If man will only seek to recognize. That means if man will, like we said, wipe his glasses and think into it, then he will be able to see that the Pi'elim and the Yankim Yisar Toed. Now we can understand why David HaMelech composed this psalm when he brought back the Torah, because it's not just the study of Torah. The idea that they had the Ark and they realized the greatness of the Ark can bring them to the recognition and realization that there was a creator of the universe.